All right, good day to all local high school lacrosse followers. Let's play ball. On behalf of the Cooper's Tavern, welcome to the Cooper's Tavern Lacrosse Podcast, sponsored by VarsitySportsNetwork.com. We're excited to be here. Cooper's Tavern was founded in honor of Cooper, the best yellow lab in the history of dogs. His life was cut short after he battled parvo, which is a dog disease. But Cooper's friendship and loyalty were second to none, and now his legacy will live on forever at Cooper's Tavern. It was and is the mission to make sure that all of our guests have fun at Cooper's. Cooper's Tavern, we love food, fun, lacrosse, and of course, dogs. Hello, my name is Matt Kennedy. I've been following high school lacrosse my whole life. And each week I'll be joined by two well-known lacrosse aficionados, Rick Bricado, longtime head coach at St. Paul's School, and Ron Klausner, director of Cooper's Lacrosse. Rick, you want to introduce yourself to the fans out there and tell us a little bit about you?
Mac, thanks for having me today. It's a blast. It's the next best thing to be in on the field, on the sideline. So I'm excited to be a part of this with Cooper's and with Varsity Sports Network.
Ron Klausner here. Very excited for this season, and thank you for having me. Really just love talking about lacrosse, so there's no better forum to have than to be here with you guys. And again, thank you for the opportunity.
Our pleasure. I think we're going to have a lot of fun doing this. And we're going to do about 10 weeks of this, and we're going to have regular segments, including sort of a hot topic of the week. We'll get into ours in a minute for this week. Sort of players to watch, a coach's corner, a segment we call Royalty and Rivals. We'll get into that further as we get along. We'll do a historical rewind each week. Of course, the game of the week. Okay, let's start with our first segment, the Hot Seat, which is sponsored by O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald. Some say that the real estate business has changed. That's just another impersonal transaction in our fast-paced world. At O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald, they don't believe that. They see buyers and sellers who want personal service now more than ever. They know that customers want and deserve something different, something better. A firm with terrific agents who are also terrific people, a comfortable atmosphere, and a personal approach where your friendship means as much to them as your business. O'Connor, Mooney, and Fitzgerald, a name you know, a team you can trust. I think the first topic we'd like to throw out there is the shot clock. Everybody's talking about it. It's coming. It's, I think, here in college, and do we want this in high school lacrosse? Ron, what do you think?
Well, I think it's long overdue. And, you know, I think it's a little bit of a personal opinion. One of the things that we grow up, lacrosse is the fastest game on 2 feet. And we, as coaches, have a tendency to slow it down just a little bit too much. And I think for the fan and the average fan, and, whether it's someone that's really enjoyed the game for many, many years or even just starting out, I like the opportunity to make this game a little bit faster, continually grow it, and give teams the opportunity to show what they have. I think that by playing fast gets more kids on the field, and I think by putting more goals on the board makes this game more exciting for everybody.
Ron, I think you hit something on the head there. You know, coaches, we do tend to want to control the game a little more. And it's a kid's game. You know, there's no doubt about it. The game's for the kids. I love the idea of the shot clock for those reasons, and also for the administration reason. I don't like having that in the officials' hands. I think they have enough going on the field. It's a very difficult game, challenging game to officiate to begin with. And I think putting the shot clock on them and having them discern whether it's time to do it or not with all the pressures they have, I say just let's go to it, speed up the game. And I think it's a great idea for the game. As a coach, I love it.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of it. I'm a purist. I don't necessarily know I have the answer. Baseball's never changed. It's still the same game. Lacrosse seems to be evolving into so many different areas.
That's why a lot of those baseball players are becoming lacrosse players.
That is very true.
Here's one right here.
But you said it. I think Rick, coach, said it. Look, the coaches have been sort of controlling the game for a long time. You think the shot clock will stop that?
I think it'll limit some of that. I think it will limit the substitution patterns that we have now that seem to slow the game down. I do think there'll be some limitations to it. Just like when we eliminated horns from the sidelines and the end lines, I think that certainly sped the game up.
No, I think actually once you implement a shot clock, it's a little bit more than anything that we've done to the sport. I mean, we've really tinkered with a couple of things, whether it's the face-off, whether it's the amount of poles on the field, with eliminating the horns and fast starts. I think a shot clock, again, I think it incorporates a lot of different aspects of the game, which, again, I think for the average fan makes it more exciting. And I think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to draw more people to our sport, which really is the ultimate goal. We're trying to grow our sport. And the way to do that is make it more exciting for everybody.
Well, I've always thought that there should be something done with the restraining lines. And as an old guy, I remember the dotted lines down the side of the restraining box. To this day, I still don't know what the dotted line was for. And I've always thought that why not, once the ball's in that box, it can't come out? So that would eliminate all of the – you're still going to have all the substitutions on the fly by the coaches. And we didn't have box coaches when we were playing. You know, now the box coach might be the most important coach on the field.
Yeah, the head coach always kind of ran the box.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly. First midfield in, first and second middies played, and then every once in a while you'd throw in the third with the old horn. You guys remember the horn?
Oh, absolutely. One of the things with, taking the substitutions out of the coach's hands, I mean, they have so much to do in a typical game that it's nice that you actually can take that away from them over time. That has happened. With a shot clock, I think it really changes our game considerably. I think you'll see different statistics. I mean, whether it's goals, the amount of players playing. I think that, to me, is the most important. I watch it in practice when we try to speed things up. One of the things you have, if you have a shot clock, again, you're going to have more shots. You're going to have more transition. You're going to need more players because guys are going to get tired. And I like that. I like that because I think it's different. And we can test it and we can implement it. And if it doesn't work, we can adjust it. But right now, I think it's something that's needed.
It's interesting, too, to watch some of these teams and their different strategies and see in the early offense that's initiated through having a shot clock, too. I love that part of the game.
Well, what are we talking about? Would it be a minute? What would be the time period?
It would probably be a minute is what I've seen. They've talked anywhere from 90 seconds to 60 seconds on the shot clock. But let's turn the timetables back to basketball back, 30, 40 years ago, when they used to do a four-corner offense and people would fall asleep.
Painful.
Dreadful. Look at the game today. Look how exciting it is. And I'm watching Villanova a couple of years ago win the national championship. A shot clock enabled that to happen, personally, in my own opinion. So I think, it sped the game up to the point where people, we don't need it, we don't want it, and then all of a sudden it's made the game to what it is today, which is exciting. And that's what draws people to the game. And as a fan, we have to, as coaches, have to take ourselves out of it and look at it as a fan. What makes it exciting? And I think certain aspects of a shot clock do make it exciting.
Well, you're as a coach, Rick, and I cannot imagine what goes on in the mind of a head coach. Is that going to be an additional pressure on these coaches? It's one more thing to worry about. Where that clock is. You're looking at two clocks now, constantly. Is there going to be a shot clock coach, so to speak, to have to whisper in the coach's ear?
I hope we're not micromanaging that bunch.
That's what I'm afraid of.
I don't think it will. On a personal level, I'm a fan of playing fast. And I think, traditionally here at St. Paul's, we have played pretty fast.
No question.
The early offense and pushing the ball has been something in transition we've always preached around here and worked hard to be good at. So I don't think that's going to be a problem. I think, if I'm on the sideline, I have the same mindset that I've always had with that. We're going to attack, we're going to be aggressive, and we're going to push the ball up and down the field as much as we can.
Well, let me ask you guys both this then. Is there an alternative to this? Or do you think this is really the only way we can go to speed up the game?
Well, there are alternatives. What they are...
are they good ones?
Yeah, that's. I think that's really what the million-dollar question. I don't know if there is one right now because the powers that be have looked at this long and hard to make sure that are we doing the right thing? Now, I'm going to throw something in there that a lot of the purists don't like, which is box lacrosse. I've had the ability over the years, an eight-year professional in the NLL and the MILL. Shot clocks were 30 seconds. Game was fast. Game was fast. I just went to a game this summer up in Canada, watch a Minto Cup game, and it was up and down, up and down. And by the time that ball got to the offense end and they got it settled, it was 15 seconds, and they went right at it. And it was exciting. You were at the edge of your seat. Does that happen and translate to the field game? I'm not sure, because we are talking about whether it's 90 or 60 seconds. Mm-hmm. But what I do think it does is, again, it gives us the opportunity to speed it up enough where we're not just passing the ball around consistently. We're attacking the goal. We're actually making our kids do what they love to do, which is shoot the ball or dodge. And again, I think it's exciting for kids to score and get that opportunity.
And I think this is one way to do that. I really do. I'm not so sure about the other ways. You know, there was a year or two there where we tinkered with not having the face-off after goals, and they thought that would speed the game up.
I remember that in the late 70s.
And it does. You know, the faceoff does slow the game down, you know, but it is an interesting part of the game.
Okay. I think we've tackled that one. We'd love to hear your input from everyone out there listening. Once again, tune into varsitysports.com, varsitysportsnetwork.com, and let us know what you think. Let us know if you agree, disagree, or what your ideas are. Let's jump into our True Players to Watch segment. True designs, engineers, and manufactures performance-driven lacrosse products with transformational technologies for improved player performance. Be sure to visit truetothegame.com to see the full line of handles, heads, gloves, and protective gear, and certainly find a retailer near you. And look for the new Key lacrosse head. It's a lighter, more accurate head with the Pro Pinch, and that's coming out in April. So our players to watch, let's start off with Coach Brocato. I know he's got a few on his list.
Quite a few. I really like, when I think about this league, the dynamic players who make huge impacts at both ends of the field and in the speed zone in the middle. And the player that comes to my mind that I will enjoy watching this year, I didn't enjoy coaching against him, is BL's long stick midfielder, Michael Ubriaco. I think he brings such tremendous energy to the game and impacts the game more than people really can tell. This is a young man who, you know, who's constantly like a water bug all over the field. He trail checks people. He'll play you straight up, and then the ball's on the ground, and before you know it, it's down the other end in his stick and, you know, creating instant offense for his team. He shoots like his dad, who I think Gene shot triple digits when he was at Boys Latin and at Loyola. But Michael is a tremendous player. So he's one guy that I'm really looking forward to watching this year. You know, I think Jacob Kelly at Calvert Hall is also, you know, proven last year what a great all-around player he is. And he has a tremendous supporting cast around him. But he's really the engine that makes everything go there. So there's another guy, I think, that makes a tremendous impact on for his team.
And speaking of the long poles, the kid out of McDonough.
BJ Farrar, yeah, terrific athlete.
They
really
remind me
tremendous
of each other.
Athlete. And they, you know, what they do with BJ is they put a short stick in his hands at times, too, and he'll play short stick D midi, and then they'll put him on the wing with his pole. And, you know, he's just a tremendous athlete.
He's an amazing. Last year, Boys Latin was playing them in, I think, the semis, and he got a ground ball in a mess, you know, bunch of players, and he came out and he outran the whole, you know, other team. No one could come close to him. And I thought that kid is probably the most exciting player I've seen this year.
I think he's playing football now. He's just decided to play football in college, if I'm not mistaken, at Penn. going.
Is he committed to Penn? Okay,
committed to Penn. Was at Loyola for lacrosse, and then he jumped, and you know, he's a tremendous football player as well.
Great
natural
athlete.
Is he going to be able to play both sports at Penn?
You know, I'm not sure they're going to be able to do that. You know, with the Ivy League academic piece, I'm not sure he'll be able to balance all of that.
Ron, you have a few players, I think.
You know, I do, and I'm a defensive guy, and I, you know, I love the polls, and there's some guys that I just really, really just absolutely love. But you know, this summer I was fortunate to be on the staff of the Under Armour team, the underclass games, and we had a player on a team, another BL boy, which is Brendan Grimes, and just really loved the work ethic of this kid. You know, was a varsity starter as a ninth grader, which is quite rare that you have that in the MIAA these days. He's a big kid, uses his body extremely well, has a cannon of a shot, but he's a humble and he's a unselfish player. He's someone that I think grew up a lot this summer. He really, you know, I guess he took a backseat to some other players at BL because he was a young kid. But I think he really is someone that they're going to look forward to being a leader on that team this year. He has unbelievable size for a high school player, right. You know, 6'3", 6'4", 210, 15 pounds. And he uses that leverage well when he's dodging around the cage. Plus, he's a lefty, which, you know, every coach loves to have a fantastic, good-sized lefty.
Amen.
So I really expect big things from him this year. And again, I love the attitude of this young man. He's just a great individual who he plays as hard as he can, and he puts his heart and soul into it. And to me, that's one of the guys I'm going to be following this year.
I would agree with you, Ron. I think he had a breakout season once the MIAA hit last year. He really stepped up, and I can remember 2, 3, maybe 4 games where he had, you know, multiple goal games, including maybe a 6-goal game a couple of times.
Yeah,
he
had a good supporting cast. You know, Matt Brandow got him the ball quite a bit, and, you know, Luke Schilling was a great feeder too. But I think Brendan really blended in with that group as a young kid and, you know, put a plug in. I coached Brendan's dad, Ryan, who went on to play at Hofstra, but he was on our 91-92 championship teams here.
I remember that season as well, Rick, being a Boys Latin guy. I remember you beat us in the championship game.
Those were some good games, 2-1-goal games. Yeah,
they were. Absolutely. Do we want to look at positions and say, you know, who are our goalies to watch?
Chris Brandow jumps out at me right off the bat from Boys Latin. I think he's terrific. I think at times last year he was the best goalie in our league. Alex Rhodes certainly had a great season and a great career here, but Chris really stepped up and I thought did some wonderful things for BL and shored up that goal for them. A dark horse kid is a kid actually that I really like here at St. Paul's, Jamie Grant, a young man who is a sophomore, who I think is going to be, you know, the next in line for the goalies that we've had here at St. Paul's, following, you know, guys like Bacigalupo, Clements, Sheehan, Barreto, Walt.
You've had a few out here that are
we've been fortunate.
Talented,
yeah.
He'll continue the tradition that you
I
have
think
here.
This young man has that kind of potential. He's a humble kid. He commands respect in the goal, and he is, you know, he's a stopper. He's very good.
He's someone who's just got a, you love a goalie. He's got fast hands. He's got good feet in the cage. He's quick, and again, I love the attitude of the kid. He is coached, you know, on the other side of things by Coach Grimes on the club side of things. So there's a St. Paul's flavor there, and I, you know, look, he's a kid that I think is going to surprise a lot of people this year, and I think that St. Paul's is going to need him this year to really battle against some of the better programs in the MIAA. So definitely a player to watch. Absolutely.
Okay, let's go into the midfield area. To me, that's where it all begins. You know, if you can't get the ball, you're not going to score. Got to pick those loose balls up between the restraining lines. So,
yep. Certainly some dynamic guys that are out there. Jack Simmons, McDonough jumps out, you know, tremendous speed, left-hander, I think is tremendous. Liam Bateman, Alex Reed, Jack Corris, all those kids are at Loyola. Jack Corris was a freshman last year, I believe, sophomore this year. you know, and he ended my career here with three great goals against us.
Another
in
lefty,
the quarterfinals.
I love those lefties.
Yep. You know, Zach Green at Calvert Hall is a kid that's kind of a two-way attacker, middie. He's very dynamic, very quick, very fast. And here at St. Paul's, we have Logan Zimnock, who I think plays with a really high motor and, you know, is a dynamic kid, too. So there are others out there as well.
I think you're just going to have a lot of, you're going to see a lot of new faces. You know, last year, you know, Brendan Curry, you know, was like a guy who was just unbelievable. And, you know, again, I think a lot of teams had good senior leadership. And I think there's, you know, Coach is right. There's a lot of, every year there's new players that come in. We know about them, but we're waiting for them to actually show it on the varsity level. Mm-hmm. And there's some kids this year that that should be able to step up and make a name for themselves. And obviously, they're going to be counted on by their teams this year. I still think we have a lot of good quality attackmen, but in the conference. But right now, midfield's really where you know, games are won and lost.
Yep.
So
yeah, you got it. And then I guess close defensemen, we have some guys on our list, or.
I actually personally like I like some of the younger guys. Again, just some guys that I have experience with. I like what Gilman has. There's some young players there. Whether how much they're going to step up or not, you know, Jack Stews and Jack Witherspoon, who I love those kids, and you know, Xander Martin. You know, they're going to have a tough defense for years. Mm-hmm. There's a few. They have a few other kids as well, but I just absolutely love what they're doing, and those guys come to mind of just kids that. Really are just, you know, they're always all out. They play hard, and they really, their technique is fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's those are three great young kids, too. It's going to be fun to watch Gilman in the future. You know, I think you got to stop. You gotta go on with George Welsh at Calvert Hall is one of the creams of the crop, you know, and Chris Smith out at McDonough is an animal. I mean, there's a boy who's going to be a football player in college, but boy, is he an imposing figure on the field. And then at BL, Reagan McNamara, the kid never makes a mistake. He is very well coached, plays with poise, and does a tremendous job as well on the field.
Okay, great. Well, listen, once again, I'd like to remind everybody that if you are a lacrosse, high school lacrosse fan, you really need to visit the varsitysportsnetwork.com website. Again, I grew up following the game. I grew up reading the Baltimore Sun, Evening Sun, News American. They all had great prep pages, but let's be honest, they don't have them anymore. So if you need your information on what's going on in the high school scene, you got to go to varsitysportsnetwork.com. And definitely visit the show page and let us know what you guys think about what we're talking about here today. Once again, this segment was sponsored by True Design, so we recommend everybody please visit truetothegame.com to see the full line of handles, heads, gloves, and protective gear that True designs. Let's go to our next segment, Coach's Corner, sponsored by Cooper's Tavern. And as we all know, Cooper's Tavern, it's a classic American establishment specializing in the freshest seafood, meats, poultry, and produce, along with an extensive collection of beer and wine. Cooper's combines excellent service in a family-friendly atmosphere, and Cooper has become recognized as one of the must-try burgers across the country. So check it out. It's located in Timonium and in Fells Point. Cooper's Tavern, it's like coming home any day of the week. And one of the things we want to talk about, we have the two coaches here. So how do coaches prepare for their teams for in February and March for the upcoming seasons? And how do they work on their chemistry and their talent and their stick work and their conditioning?
Well, it's honestly it's a tough time because, you know, one of the things as coaches we emphasize, at least I know that we do, is we like to have kids play multiple sports. So a lot of these kids are coming out of basketball, they're coming out of whether it's wrestling or track. They haven't had a stick in their hand on a regular basis. So you're incorporating not just the skills back into what on a daily basis and knocking the rust off, as we as coaches like to talk about. But, you know, it's making yourself familiar with the surroundings around you. You know, you have a, you know, high school teams in the area – 35 to 45 kids, possibly even more, that are playing together, and there's new faces, younger kids coming up, the older ones are gone. How do you do that? And it's not an easy, you have to meld it together. And what we always stress is, you know, picking up that stick. It's making sure that the stick's in your hand, so by the time you come out to practice that first time, you're somewhat ready to go. You're not going to be completely ready because you might be throwing off a wall that's 10 feet away from you or 15 feet away from you. Now you have to make a pass that's 20 or 25 yards away.
On the run.
It gets sloppy. You watch a lot of practices. I've had the ability to go to a couple of practices, whether they're college practices in the area, Hopkins, Towson, Loyola, or, you know, watching a Calvert Hall or someone else, you know, just get out there for that first time. Balls are all over the place.
Well, let me ask you this, though. The kids today are worried about missing out if they play another sport. And I know every coach is emphasizing three-sport athletes. I know the college coaches are emphasizing it. But it doesn't seem to be resonating with the kids. I know the kids that I'm around, they fear that if they're not out there doing the 365 lacrosse, that they're going to miss out on something. So, Rick, what do you think about it? You dealt with it.
I completely agree. I think it's something that's really, if you ask me, is troubling with our sport. You know, that where these kids feel almost like how soccer has become and things like that, where you have to play year round, and so you don't establish playing these other sports and utilizing these other muscles that Ron was talking about that are so important for kids, and how there's another piece in it all too for me is competing. You know, and these guys that are playing multiple sports, they're competing every single day. And I think that's really important, rather than just isolating your skills or just playing lacrosse or just playing soccer or whatever. I think it's really important that they're out there playing these different sports. But the platform that we have right now with year-round lacrosse, I think is a part of all of this, and it's really hard for these kids. And so we're seeing more injuries. Personally, I've seen more back injuries than I'd care to see with young kids. So I think we really have to be careful with that. And I think part of that is allowing these kids the time to play the other sports, to put the stick down, like Ron had said, for a while, for a couple of months, and then come back to it.
And there's nothing wrong with doing that. I also think that it helps in preventing the burnout of our sport. I mean, too many kids walk away from our sport now at a latter time period, you know, coming up into high school, they're not going to play in college because it's just they've been through the battles too much. I think the pressure, too, that we put on our kids is just, it's too much, and it's not right. I never had that pressure growing up.
Yeah, Ron, we talk now about the grind, you know? Well, think about that word. The grind. It's a physical and a mental grind on these young bodies, these young minds.
Well, when we were growing up, it was football and soccer, and then in the winter it was basketball or wrestling, and then lacrosse, and most schools, you know, the private schools, a lot of them didn't even have baseball teams. And you played every sport every season.
And personally, I never thought it was a grind. I loved playing all those sports. Yep. You know, my dad always said, hey, your favorite sport is the one you're in right now.
Correct.
And I think that's a really healthy philosophy, and I feel very grateful that I had got that growing up.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of people, it's a follow the leader. So if doing all this extra work over here, maybe I have to do that to be on the team or get a spot. Is he going to take my spot? So now more kids are doing it. And I think also the way soccer really, I've heard it from so many kids, hey, we're going full year-round. And I want my kids at Cooper's to play multiple sports. It helps, again, develop the different muscles.
Then why isn't that message reaching these kids? I don't think it's hitting them. I hear every coach saying it, and I know that I can tell how you're talking right now. You feel it from your heart. Play multiple sports.
I think
and
part
yet they're
of it
still
is this,
having that problem.
Part of it is, you know, stems back to the early recruiting, too. You know, in order to get a leg up, in order to get an advantage,
will the
in order
recruiting
to get seen,
fix you know, this, so to speak?
I hope so.
Now that
I'm not so sure. You know, it's tough to put the genie back in the bottle once it comes out, right? So that's what I'm worried about. You know, can we do that? I think it's a good start with the recruiting piece. But I think parents have to jump on board, too, and parents have to help the kids drive this car, so to speak. You know, we tend to, I think, as parents, some parents tend to overprogram their kids, you know. So that's a piece that we really have to do a better job.
I actually talked to a coach the other day, and one of the things he said was his parents, one of the local clubs was doing a recruiting seminar, and the parents from his team were calling up and asking, should they go? And obviously this is going to be important for our child. Unfortunately, that the boys that he coaches is a fourth grade team. And instead of going to the meeting, before the meeting, he said he didn't deter any parents from going or stop them, but he said, let's have a meeting ourselves. And he pointed around the room. He said, you know, what's going to hurt the most is you guys, you know,
right,
you got the pressure, the fourth grade, let's go
spot
get ice
on.
Cream.
Yeah.
Let's unfortunately, again, the pressure is not just put on by us as programs, but it's a lot has to do with the parents because they really want to have their child succeed. And there's a false sense of also the aspect of scholarships and other aspects and things of that nature. They're just not there on the same level as perception is just not reality.
I got one more question for the coaches here. And it's, I always think the team that has the best chemistry usually wins. And I don't think you can coach that. But how do you develop that on the team?
Yeah, that's the tricky part. And this is always, you know, had always been my favorite time of the year. This early season, trying to establish your team's identity, trying to put guys in the right spots where they can be successful and the team can be successful. And that is a little bit of a chess match every single day. Lineups are changing. You know, you don't want to take the whole bottle of aspirin, you know, after a tough maybe scrimmage or a game. But you jockey some things around. You see what works well. And I think that's developing chemistry, but I think it's also leadership that you have on your team and developing leaders so that chemistry can build within. Because, you know, as coaches, we can lead our teams, but great teams, the players lead their teams.
And I think that what coaches, I think there's two ways of building chemistry. I think there's the on the field and there's the off the field. I know that a lot of people and what people have done and changed, you know, we'll go bowling with our team. We'll go to the movies. We'll do paintball. Paintball's actually been a big thing with our guys in the off season. They love it. They're together. They do things that the sticks aren't, that it's not part of the equation. It's not Tommy's a better player than Joey. It's we're all buddies and we're all, you know, who can get the most shots on a paintball.
I'm going to shoot Joey in the head with my gun, my paintball gun.
Providing opportunities for kids to be kids and to grow together.
That's exactly it. And if they can grow together off the field, the chemistry typically on the field is that much greater, so you have more success.
That's great stuff. Hey, once again, this segment was brought to you by Cooper's Tavern. If you haven't been there, you're really missing out on something. So we recommend that everyone go out to Cooper's Tavern, two locations, one in Timonium, one in Fells Point. And once again, Cooper's Tavern, it's like home any day of the week. Our next segment is going to be Royalty and Rivals. It's brought to you by McKenzie Commercial Real Estate, which is a company that you keep. That's their motto, the company you keep. McKenzie provides clients a competitive, full-service platform of offerings in leasing, sales, investment sales, tenant and landlord advisory services, debt and equity capital placement, and market research. They do it all, in other words. With more than 225 players on the team, McKenzie is one of the largest non-affiliated full-service commercial real estate firms in the Mid-Atlantic. Together, our associates prove time, and again, why they are the company that you keep. So today we're going to start our Royalty and Rivals with a public school rivalry that's probably one of the best ever. And I know Rick's been involved in it a lot as a former Towson general, the Towson-Delaney rivalry.
Oh, you hit it. Something near and dear to my heart. So, yeah, I was fortunate enough to play in that rivalry, 79, 80, and 81, and did some extensive research on it. And, you know, Delaney came into the picture in 1964, the school was built. up until that point, Towson had ruled public school lacrosse in the county, in Baltimore County.
Well, there were only like three teams, I believe.
Right, since 1935.
Then.
Towson dates back to playing in 1935. So, you know, it really was. And you know, you can throw in teams like Poly and City that were tremendous in the city public school system as well. Forest Park was another great one. But I think the big one around, you know, in this state really came into fruition when Delaney was built, and then they started that rivalry. And it didn't quite start out as a rivalry. The first game was back in 64. Towson, you know, pretty much stomped them 11-1 in that game, from what I found out. Bill Thomas was the coach at Towson at that point, the Bear, they used to call him. And but the next year, something odd happened. And it was factored by the elements, the rain. It was a pouring down rainstorm. It was a mud fest, and Delaney's tied, you know, had a great game against Towson. Towson was slowed down and ended up in a 6-6 tie. I think that really upset the Bear. And from that point on, there were 12 straight or 11 straight Towson wins. But in recent years, that has gone the other way. And Delaney's done a tremendous job building their program from that point on. And I would say Delaney's had kind of the upper hand. But it has been a true rivalry in the sense that it's kind of gone back and forth. So we're playing the 52nd Towson-Delaney game this year. And I'm looking forward to going. I know alumni from both sides are looking forward to going. We're making a big deal out of it because we missed the 50th. But the 52nd one comes up at this point. It's Towson has 27 wins. Delaney has 24 wins with the one tie back in 1966. You know, you look at some of the guys that have played in this in this rivalry, and it's tremendous. Skip Lickfuss, Jack Thomas, one of the best players of all time. Skeet Chadwick, one of the best goalies. We're talking Hall of Famers here. God rest his soul, Tommy Kegler, who was a defenseman, went to W&L, multiple All-American, and really maybe one of the first defensemen that absolutely had stick work like an offensive player.
Which was a lot. Was very difficult year. Back with the sticks.
With the wooden sticks, right?
Oh, yeah. God.
You got that
difficult,
right.
Difficult to play
I
with.
I think Tom Kegler sort of revolutionized today's – I mean, sort of made today's defensemen who they are.
I would totally agree with that. You know, you have other guys that have come through there like Mike Farrell and, you know, Dave Petromalo, of course, you know. But Tom really started it off.
Tom was a finesse defenseman
who
could also be physical.
He was.
Fun to watch.
He really was. You know, and this rivalry's gone back and forth. As I said, Towson had an 11-game win streak. Well, there was a time when Delaney had a 12-game win streak.
So let me ask you this. How did Coach Thomas, how did he get all these guys? I mean, you go through the teams that he had. You just rattled off a couple of the names.
The beauty of the feeder system. And, you know, you have to understand.
Kelly Post, was that what it was back then?
You have to understand, that's exactly right. That was one of the biggest, you know, the biggest recreational leagues at the time was Kelly Post. And the development of Kelly Post lacrosse by guys like Fielding Lewis and Bill Duquette, the father of Tom Duquette, you know, really kind of changed the face of lacrosse here in Baltimore County. So all those boys, we all went to, you know, Rogers Forge, Dumbarton, and Towson. That was the path at that point. And, you know, there were private schools around. They were playing in their own league, but it still meant something to play for your neighborhood high school. And you know, all of us Rogers Forge, Stoneleigh, Wiltondale guys, Knollwood guys would go on and play at Towson. And, of course, all the Lutherville and Cockeysville guys would go on and you know, represent Delaney.
And, you know, being a player that came down from New York in the fall of 1984, I really didn't know anything about the culture of lacrosse in this area, and it was, you know, it was amazing. You know, up in Long Island, you know, we talk about the feeder systems. We really had very few feeder systems up in Long Island. You know, they had the police leagues that played a little bit, but not every town had them. But you went to your school and you decided it was baseball or lacrosse. Seventh grade, it was. What are you going to play? You had a mitt or you had a stick, and whatever one you gravitated to is the one you stuck with. And, you know, when I came down here, the Towson-Delaney rivalry, because I had both Towson and Delaney players on my team at Towson, I learned quickly about the history. I learned quick, you know, my club coach was Skip Lickfist, when you talk about, you know, Towson greats. And, you know, one of my old teammates, Brendan Kelly, was one of the guys I watched, you know, when he was, when I was a freshman. He was a senior at Towson, and unbelievable player.
My first coaching gig was coaching on Randy Dace, who was my high school coach, and I coached Brendan. What a great player he
great
was.
Great player, great kid, and a former teammate of mine with Mount Washington. We played professionally in the indoor ranks together. Brendan was a great guy, but you know, I also coached Brian when I coached at Hopkins, his brother. The guys from Marty Young and Tommy Carson, and just the list goes on. The Delaney guys, again, Jeff Nordberg, and Ed Stevenson, phenomenal players.
How about Glenn Miles?
Glenny Miles.
Holy cow.
Another one that I've had the pleasure to play with. So the rivalry was great. You know, one of the things you're going to laugh at, which is the field conditions of these fields were reminiscent of what we had on Long Island. So they were dirt bowls. I remember going to the first game, Towson-Delaney, over at the first field when you pull up to Delaney, which is right on the Delaney Valley, not Delaney
Pot
Valley
Spring,
Road.
Right? Right on that road?
The Pot Spring. Yeah. That field was embarrassing. For such a great rivalry, it was more dirt than it was grass.
Well, it's funny, Ron, you mentioned that. You know, I played on that field my senior year. We had about 4,000 people at the game in a great game, Baltimore County Championship, 14-13. Bob Scott was there, Don Zimmerman, all the great coaches, Carl Runk, all were there lined up on that field. And it was our field at Towson was worse. We called it Astro Dirt. There was not a speck of blade of grass on the field. And, you know, David Wingate, who I was fortunate enough to play with both at Dumbarton and played for his dad, Elmer, as well, and at Towson, he would always say, hey, Brock, let's aim for the rocks and we'll get a good bounce up into the upper corner off of that. So those were some classic fields.
Yeah, and the fields that we had on Long Island, especially my hometown of Wantagh, and I'm going to be straight with you on this. This is actually something that happened. We used to shuffle our feet in the dirt, which was dry, which would create a dust cloud that would come up so the offense of the other team couldn't see the ball when they were passing it. And, you know, you're breathing that in. It was difficult. You couldn't see. It
worked just both ways. It was a great screen, too, for goalies.
Absolutely. You couldn't see anything. So
there was a game I went to when I was in grade school, and I was watching. It was a varsity game. The ball literally got lost in the mud. And the referees blew the whistle, and they did a face-off somewhere where they thought the ball was. It's amazing. It's an amazing the way the game is developed with the field. The one thing I want people to know is, I think they think too much of MIA lacrosse. They're the best. I don't think people appreciate how good Towson and Delaney have been through the years. And the one team that I remember as a kid was the Towson team that went on to play Calvert Hall for the mythical state championship. And Rick, I don't know if you were there.
I was
there. 11-10.
Yep. Tremendous game.
Two teams that were, you know, Calvert Hall was the class of the MSA back then, before the MIA, and Towson was the number one ranked team, and either team could have won that game. And just shows you how good Towson lacrosse has been through the years.
You think about some of the players. Ron rattled off a list of names, but, you know, you go back up. Randy Dace, he was a three-sport athlete. You know, I'm so grateful to have him as my coach. He changed my life. John Cheek.
Oh, my God. Cheeker
was tremendous.
Absolutely.
And a Hall of Famer. You know,
Jim Moorhead on defense.
You go down the list. Moorhead. How about Jeff Benson, Jay Connor? I mean, you just go down this list. It's a who's who. David Wingate, Pat O'Connor. You know, we talked about Glenn Miles. Kevin Kilner, who's an actor out in Hollywood now.
Delaney.
Played for Delaney.
Sure.
Kirk Thurston. Chris O'Brien. Dan Llewellyn. Brian Rogers. You know, they're just some
the list goes
big
on.
Names. It does go on. And it's – those names are lost in this area, I feel, because of the birth of the MSA and the MIAA, the dominance of that.
Well, that's great stuff in our royalty and rivalry section. Once again, it was brought to you by McKenzie Commercial Real Estate. And once again, they are the company that you keep. Okay, next up is the Kelly & Associates Insurance Group and Kelly Payroll Heyday segment. Kelly's pleased to support VarsitySportsNetwork.com. Kelly & Associates helps employees and employers save time, money, and hassle in investigating the intricacies of insurance benefits, payroll, and workforce challenges. Visit www.kellyway.com to put their people, technology, and services to work for you. I was at the kellyway.com website just today, and it's a really easy website to navigate, so I recommend all you guys out there who need these services to check it out. So in a previous segment, we were talking about the Towson-Delaney rivalry, perhaps one of the best public school rivalries in the country, and the name Randy Dace came up, who coached at Towson for many years, from 1979 to 1997. And Coach, I did some research on this and found out that you are number 11 all-time in the state of Maryland for victories. However, there's one guy behind you, one win behind you, and he happens to be the guy sitting right next to you. So perhaps he's probably going to claim that some of those wins that you got were, you know, because of his stellar play. So you're at 242 wins, and Coach Brocato is at 241 wins. So, Coach Brocato, do you have anything to say about that or issues?
No issues. That's why I retired, because I thought Coach needed to be on top here.
And I'm sure glad he retired so I could keep that one win victory. I'm just kidding, Coach. I had no idea about the wins and the losses.
Well, I don't know how many losses you had. I bet you, I don't know, one of you had more losses than the other, so we'll have to check that out and maybe get back to you on that one. So.
I think I had probably about 100 more losses than Coach, if I can remember right. And I did some research on you, Coach. I think only 25 or 26 losses in your career.
You know, that's interesting, because one of the flaws looking back in the coaching career is after every game, I had a basketball coach at Towson High School named Randy Walker, and he would go home and he would log the score of the game and highlights of every game that he was involved with. And I did a lot of things that Coach Walker taught me, but I never logged any stats, statistics, or wins and losses, because I was always looking forward to the next game to get back on the field. Looking back, I wish I would have taken a picture of every team, put it in the album, and put all the stats down, all that, but I never got involved with. I was never a numbers guy. That's why I'm a social studies teacher, I guess.
Okay, well, listen, what are your thoughts on the Towson-Delaney rival? We really went over a lot of specifics, but we probably weren't fair to a lot of players. We rattled off sort of the obvious names. We probably left off some Delaney players that were, you know, phenomenal. I thought about it afterwards, Brock, that we didn't even mention some of, you know, the guys like Jake Reed and some of the stellar players that have, you know, helped their program through the years. So as a coach at Towson, obviously you knew your players. You probably knew the Delaney players fairly well, too, from scouting and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, and it's funny because time passes you by. But when I think of Towson-Delaney, I think of the Spino family, because the Spinos, I think, if I'm not mistaken, had two or three outstanding lacrosse players. And they represented Delaney very well over the years. Anytime I run into an old Delaney player, I'll say, now your name is such and such, and they'll tell me, and I'll say, tell me your number, and then I just go home to my file cabinet, and all the scouting reports, I can look them up and tell them if they had the right hand, left hand, and what type of midfielder, attacker, or defenseman, because I still have every scouting report of Delaney at home in the basement, because when we played Delaney, I took that very seriously. I opened my briefcase, and we would go out, and we would scout them two or three times before that game, because I was a real believer in scouting make the difference. And Coach Brocato should know that, because nobody knows. He scouted for us at Towson for several years, and he was the unknown ghost behind our victories and success.
Those were some good years. I think I had my start there. That's right after I graduated from high school. And had my start. Randy gave me my first, you know, assignment, so to speak. And so we would go out together with Coach O and scout right. A lot of games, John yeah. Offerman.
I would have loved to have Rick on the staff at that time, but in the Baltimore County Public School System, we were not allowed to hire anybody unless they were a certified teacher. And so, unfortunately, I couldn't have Rick. And I don't think people appreciate, but back in those days, I coached by myself the whole time. Coach Walker, who was the athletic director, I was 22, 23 years old. I had the varsity at that time. He would come out and monitor one half the field. But when it came to coaching, I would warm the goalie up, and then I ran the whole show by myself. And it wasn't until 1997, the last year I coached lacrosse at Towson, I had Scott Hoskins, Ben Berquist, Coach Offerman, John Offerman, and myself, and it was a luxury. I just got to do a little, watch them all work the box and work the D and the O, and it was just fantastic. And I don't know why I retired after that, but it was a real, it was like driving a BMW and a Cadillac to have all that help.
Well, you and I talked all winter long about, you know, coaches and some of the guys that maybe influenced you. You played for some great ones, you know, I guess Mr. Thomas at Towson and, of course, Coach Scott at Johns Hopkins. Are they the two biggest influences on you? Or?
I would say Coach Scott and Coach Ciccarone at Johns Hopkins when I played there. Also, Coach Scroggs, Willie Scroggs, who went down to Carolina with great success. He was there at Hopkins, and there was a great defensive coach by the name of Freddie Smith. And Freddie Smith was probably one of the best minds of defense at that time. And Coach Steinman was the face-off man. But I learned my lacrosse from Coach Scott and Ciccarone.
You know, one of the things I like to point out is, you know, one of the reasons why I got into coaching, and you hear Scott Hoskins' name brought up, who's a good friend of mine, you know, we look up to the coaches that gave us those opportunities in the beginning. And you're talking about, you know, Coach Percato getting that opportunity to scout games and do the little things. And honestly, you know, they're the seeds that turn someone into a, you know, into a great coach. And it gives us a platform to go off of it. And, you know, Coach Runka, who I played for in college, was such a mentor to me and gave me my first college opportunity to coach. I coached when I got out of college, coached at Loyola. And everything was just off of opportunity, and you watch these legendary coaches give you that chance. And once you take that chance, you use what you've learned and you create yourself and what makes you a good, great, or an exceptional coach. And you're sitting with two exceptional coaches right here.
Rick, is this the guy that influenced you?
Oh, without question. And I think he influenced me beyond just coaching in the lacrosse field. He really was the guy that made me a believer in the teacher-coach model and how important that was in a child's life. And so I had Randy for U.S. history as a junior, and then I also had you for the Constitution class. I think we called it Sippy back then, yes, right, Sippy. Coach? And so 2 years back-to-back, and then, you know, for 3 years on the field. And I'll never forget, I started out at Calvert Hall. Kind of broke the family mold. Everybody in my family went to Loyola, and Coach Thomas had recruited me to go to Calvert Hall. And, you know, I'll never forget it. I used to go over and watch, actually, Coach Dace play in the 70s, ride my bike from Rogers Forge and from Stoneleigh, and I would watch you play on those great teams at Towson in the 70s. And, you know, I just wasn't happy at Calvert Hall overall. I had some learning issues, things like that. And I'll never forget, Coach, it's ironic that you talk about Coach Scott, because I went to Bob Scott lacrosse camps for all those years, and I had a conversation with Bob Scott when I was thinking about leaving Calvert Hall. And Coach Scott said to me, you know, you're right in the backyard, you were a Dumbarton guy, you should go and play for Randy Dace, because he is one of the great guys in the game. And I'll never forget the quote he told me. He said, you know, good guys can be winners, and Randy Dace was a winner, and I have never forgotten that when I played for him and beyond that, and he really did inspire me to be a teacher and a coach, so I thank him for that. The other night we had a great function at the Green Turtle for Towson High Lacrosse and honored him, and it was a great opportunity for me to let him know in front of everybody that.
And as a coach, you don't realize the impact that you have on players, especially as a teacher and a coach, until later on in life. And but, you know, you're lucky as a coach. I like to have Rick Percato as a player. It's just outstanding. Tremendous mind for the game. And I even appreciated you more, Rick, once you left and started scouting. And those scouting reports that came back were phenomenal. And I knew that he was going to be successful in his career, and he's demonstrated that every stop he's made here in the Baltimore metropolitan area and even out west. And it's really gratifying as a human being when you see your old players get into teaching and coaching. And because it's a profession that a lot of people say, hey, you know, you're not going to make a whole lot of dollars, but you know what? Those memories that I have and that time I spend with my players and my students, nobody has any money for that. Those are memories that you can't buy whatsoever. And sometimes it doesn't help the mortgage, but you know what? It's all right with me.
That's true. I'll tell you, when I came down here to Maryland from Long Island, one of the first names in lacrosse besides Carl Runk was Coach Dace. And you know, one of the things I want to add to that is it's not just about lacrosse coaches that you've developed. I think you really have had a – you've touched a lot of lives, and you helped really mold a lot of good men. And I've known a lot of good Towson guys that played under you over the years. And they weren't just good lacrosse players. They didn't turn out to be good rec coaches. They were good people. And that's where, as a coach, if you have the ability to touch someone both on and off the field, that's an exceptional talent. And it's something that is, to be honest with you, missing in today's world. I wish more coaches had the ability to touch people's lives like they did 20, 30 years ago.
I guess this question's like, who's your favorite child? Who do you love the most? Which is a bad question. But do any teams stand out with you? I mean, I look back into your career, and I know your last team, I believe, was a championship team, correct? 97?
Yes, it was in 97. But I guess when there's one team, and I use this expression when I'm at school nowadays, walking the hallways at 2018, because I've been teaching it now for 41 years, and I'll say, that young man looks like a 1985 young man, or that young lady looks like 1985. And in 1985, we had an outstanding lacrosse team led by Brendan Kelly. Brendan Kelly left Towson and went on to Johns Hopkins to become an All-American midfielder. And Brendan took a bunch of guys who were pretty good lacrosse players, but he was outstanding. And through his leadership and his being the general on the field, he took them to, if I'm not mistaken, it was an undefeated season. We won the state title, and Brendan, as a public school boy, was named Player of the Year by the Sun Papers, and that's a tremendous accomplishment. It wasn't the ideal of, you know, sure, we won the championship. That's great, but what Brendan did as a human being and the leadership he displayed, and his family is a great lacrosse family, and his two other brothers played for us, Tommy and Brian over at Goucher, and Brian's now the Goucher coach at I'm so proud of him being the coach over at Goucher. So that was one team I always think back upon as good times, and I had great respect for.
I may add that you were the coach, Brendan. You were also the coach of the year that year in the Baltimore Sun.
Yeah,
so.
He was. It was amazing to watch Brendan.
If you had Brendan Kelly, you could be coach of the year too, you know.
Brendan made everybody around him better, didn't he, Coach?
Yes,
he really did.
And you did that all by yourself. You were the only – you had no help that year.
I had the athletic director who would monitor, but we worked pretty hard. But, you know, we talk about our players and proud, but when I could bring Ben Berquist, his brother Steve Berquist, Timmy Berquist, played ball for us at Towson, and Ben was the little – baby. And Ben had some issues with his mom and health, and he didn't really get to play his senior year. And I got a phone call years later after he graduated from Salisbury. Coach, could I coach with you? And you know what? He was certified. He came out. He helped me coach soccer for years, helped me coach basketball for years, and was phenomenal in helping us with the lacrosse program. So I've been lucky where I've been in terms of the situation and the type of people I've had to come to Towson High School.
Right. I think thousands of your students and players are very fortunate that you were there for them for all those years. So thanks for coming in today, Coach Dace, and hopefully we'll have you back someday soon.
Thank you very much. I totally enjoyed myself.
Thanks, Coach.
Thank you, Coach.
That segment, once again, the Heyday segment, was brought to you by Kelly & Associates Insurance Group and Kelly Payroll. Once again, if you visit the website at www.kellyway.com, to help them put their people, technologies, and services to work for you. Now it's time for the VarsitySportsNetwork.com Top 10 segment. There are fans of high school sports and thousands of us out there, and if you want complete coverage of today's or yesterday's games and the most comprehensive coverage of all high school sports, I highly recommend you visit VarsitySportsNetwork.com. I go there every day because it's really the only place I can get scores and highlights of all the high school action from the previous days. VarsitySportsNetwork.com features game coverage, feature articles, video highlights, interviews, and has really the area's most comprehensive presentation of schedules, standings, and scores. And when was the last time you saw standings in one of the newspapers? You just don't see it anymore. So visit VarsitySportsNetwork.com often. And I'll be honest with it, I visit about 5 to 6 times a day. So now we're going to start with the top 10. We're going to go in descending order. And for the preseason poll, we're going to start out with number 10, the Hereford Bulls, playing out of North Baltimore County. Hereford's one of those programs that's been around for a long time. I looked it up. In the 2000s, they've had 7 state Maryland titles. So I think they're a force to be reckoned with. Any of you guys have any indication on some of their players? I know one of their hot stars is a guy named Scott Middleton, a midfielder, who I believe was a second-team All-Metro last year. So they obviously have a lot of talent coming back in him. And
Scott's the leader of that team and probably one of the best players in Baltimore County this year. So I think he will step up for them. And, you know, you're right, Brian King and Carl Runk, actually, before Brian, really kind of transformed that program at Hereford. And they've been, you know, one of the top teams in the last 15 years. Right. There's no doubt about it. One, I know it all too well. One of my St. Paul's teams lost to them in 2012, 11-10 out at Hereford under the lights. Right. Sure. And the next year they beat Gilman. So this is a team that can play with the big boys.
They've got a lot of good athletes, and you know, especially from some of the younger guys that came up from the JV. I think they really do have a nice group. We'll see how they do, you know, as they start hitting the Severna Parks and other powers around the state. But I think in this area, they're going to be a force to be reckoned with.
Sure. Number 9, we have Severn School, and I believe they're going through a coaching change this year. Is that correct? Their coach last year is going down to the Calverton School.
Yes, Jamie McNeely is the headmaster or the head of athletics at the Calverton School. So I believe they brought in his assistant to take over that program, if I'm not mistaken.
So Severn's always a force to be reckoned with. Coming in at number 8 is a school that we all know about, Gilman School, under Brooks Matthews. Gilman obviously is tough every year. I think they have quite a bit of returning talent coming back. I know they're young. From what I've read on VarsitySportsNetwork.com, they're a young team this year. But
yeah, Ron really likes this team. Ron, you know these guys pretty well, don't you?
Well, I really like their defensive players. Again, still on the young side, so we're going to be talking about them for a few years to come. Jack Witherspoon, you know, at 6'4", 215 pounds. You know, has the size to play Division I lacrosse right now. And, you know, he's got 3 years of varsity to play. And, you know, I really like Xander Martin. I think he's a great player. And, you know, there's all the way across the board, I really think they have some talent that's probably for the next 3 years are going to surprise a bunch of people. So, but I really like Jack Stusen's another defensive player. I think their goalie play is solid. So I'm really looking forward to seeing these guys and what they can do, especially against some of the stronger teams in the conference.
Yeah, it starts on defense with them, doesn't it, Ron?
Absolutely.
And they lost, you know, a big-time player in Wade Ausler, who graduated and is at Maryland now. So,
okay, coming in at number 7 is a team I think Rick knows a little bit about, the St. Paul's Crusaders.
Yep, you know, I think the Crusaders are, you know, going to be in a little bit of a transition, but Trey Whitty will do a great job leading them. They are strong on the defensive end of the field. And again, in kind of St. Paul's true form, they have an outstanding young goalie in Jamie Grant. And
he's a sophomore, right?
He's a sophomore.
Yeah.
And Logan Zimnock is probably their go-to guy on the offensive end of the field, a midfielder and attackman who's going to take his talent to Towson University next year. But defense is really the mark of this team. All the defenders are back, including their long stick middies.
And I'll just double that. You know, the question mark is Jamie. Jimmy. I think he's a fantastic young goalie, but he hasn't played on the varsity level yet. And you're replacing Alex Rode, who is absolutely dynamite and kept this team in games last year. So we're going to have to see if St. Paul's can count on Jamie the same way they counted on Alex over the past few years.
They're going to be as good as their seniors are, I think, really, too. You know, Coach Petromala down at Hopkins always says you're only as good as your senior class, and those guys are going to have to step up this year for St. Paul's.
Okay, coming at number six is probably a team that us up here in North Baltimore County don't appreciate as much as we should, is Severna Park. And I know I looked up their results from last year. This is a program that's just been doing gangbusters in the 2000s as well. They have six Division 4A, 3A state titles, and I believe they're led by Josh Kaufman, who was a second-team All-Middy last year. So I know through the years they've been tough. They've come up here and played some of the private schools tough, even beaten some of the private schools. They're sounds like to me they're a sort of a force to be reckoned with this year.
Well, I remember just this summer watching some of the Severna Park kids at both Under Armour tryouts, and I was very, very impressed with the poise and the experience that these guys had, the stick skills. You know, they look like what we consider private school elite players. They really did a nice job on the field. And again, I think that they're a team with a lot of athletes. They're very similar. I always considered them similar to a like Hanford over the past few years of Anne Arundel County. They have great athletes. And if you sleep on them, they're gonna come up and bite you. I think they have a great team.
They do a great job, too, of keeping the guys in Severna Park in Severna Park. You know, they have a lot of competition with St. Mary's, Spalding, and Severn, but I think over the years their bread and butter has been able to keep some of those guys there. And you're right about Josh Kaufman. He is an old-school throwback middie. He can play both ends of the field and in the speed zone.
Well, we're going to stay in Anne Arundel County at number five. Rick just mentioned St. Mary's. St. Mary's Saints come in at number five. Probably led by attackman, first-team All-Metro, I believe, last year on the Baltimore Sun, Ian Kramp. I hope I pronounced his name correctly.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And, of course, St. Mary's is won it a couple years ago, always a force to be reckoned with. And I think they always have the toughest time in the MIA because they have to get on a bus just about every game outside of their home games. We take it for granted when Boys Latin plays St. Paul's, it's a 5-minute bus ride, or Loyola or Gilman. We can walk to Gilman, you know. And so it's tough for St. Mary's, I think, to get on a bus and come up to Baltimore, you know, 5, 6, 7 times a year. It's got to be tough on them.
But this is a dynamic team. They've put together a good group of kids that have grown together over the years. Ian's one. Jack Burnett's come in, son of former St. Mary's great Mike Burnett. Their goalie, Alex Fiak, is outstanding. And I think that Brian Burlace's son is on that team, who's outstanding as well as a defender. And, you know, Victor Lilly, their head coach, has put together a dynamic staff, including bringing back legendary Jim Moorhead, the coach. And I think that was a big reason for their success last year, is that coaching staff and having that influence of Coach Moorhead on the sideline, too.
I really like what Victor's doing down there. Victor's a former teammate of mine at Towson, and really he is doing a fantastic job. I also want to say one of the best players in the region, a kid named Alex Wicks, a two-way player who's just, I do believe he's a University of Maryland recruit. You're going to hear that name for years to come, both on the high school and the college level. And just a fantastic kid, but another weapon in the arsenal for St. Mary's this year.
Okay, coming in at number four is Loyola Blakefield. And Coach, I'm going to ask you this question because this is Ben Rubior's swan song. This is his last year. He's going to be leaving after this year. You went through all this last year with St. Paul's. Tougher for Ben? Easy to get his kids up?
You know, it's very different than I think my experience was. You know, I've been here for a long time. I think Ben's been there for 3 years. I think he's made a great impact on their program, but I think it's a different experience for him. And, you know, it's going to be emotional because that is his alma mater as well. But he's done a tremendous job of getting those guys to the semifinals in his first 2 years there. And I think they're going to be there again this year. They have the talent all over the field, especially in the middle of the field. And guys like Liam Bateman, Alex Reed, and the young kid, Jack Corris, who was dynamite last year
as a freshman. Last year, yeah,
absolutely.
Right.
So, you know, I think they'll play hard for their coach because they do love him, and they'll work hard for him, and they'll be in the thick of it, you know. And then next year, Coach Ubriaco will take over, and it'll be his turn.
I still think you're going to hear Coach Rubio's name for years to come, whether it's he takes a little bit of a break for the next couple of years, but you will hear that name again. He is a fantastic coach and really does a nice job with his team every year. Remember what he did at St. Mary's a couple of years ago, and having short time to work with what he's done at Loyola, really leaving Coach Ubriaco with a cupboard full of nice weapons.
Okay, coming in at number three, Boys Latin. We talked about them in an earlier segment. They have some talent coming back. Coach, you've played against Boys Latin a few times.
This is a team I think everybody better not sleep on. You know, they're talking about Calvert Hall. They're talking about McDonough. But I really see this team, and I like this group of guys. I think they have great senior leadership. Michael Ubriaco in the middle of the field is as dynamic as they get as a long stick midfielder. And Reagan McNamara down at close defense really is going to do a tremendous job there. He's steady. He's poised. He never makes a mistake. I watched film of him all last year, and then against us, never saw the kid make a mistake or get beat. Chris Brandow is probably the best goalie in the league. There's no doubt about it. And then you look on that attack, and it's loaded. Matt Brandow is the leader of that team and has done a tremendous job. He's going to Yale next year. He's a very cerebral player, but he's also a great athlete and understands the game and gets everybody around him. You know, we talked about Brendan Kelly making people better around him. That's what Matt does. And then they have, you know, Brendan Grimes also, that big lefty that had a breakout season last season, and you know I'm looking for great things from him as well.
I think one of the things regarding BL or just about any team, if you have a field general on offense, as you do with Brandow and his brother in the goal, where you have a good stopper, you really have the blueprint for a successful, whether it's a year, whether it's a program in itself. I really love having someone that when you have the ball and you need a goal, you know, you can go to someone and they can generate offense, whether they can beat their man with their feet, you know, find the open man. And then obviously when you make a mistake, you got a stopper that can make that save when you need it most. So I do like what BL has, and people should not sleep on them. I do think they got a ton of talent.
Speaking of talent, number two, McDonough School, and they got a boatload of talent coming back in BJ Ferrari.
Ferrar. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think he is one of the best players I've seen in a long time. Chris Smith on defense, Jack Simmons at midfield, Liam Powderleap, second team All Metro last year at attack. I think they're loaded as well.
Without question, you know, they are. They are loaded. They have a good face-off man who came up from St. Andrews in Florida last year and made a big impact on this team. They also have a young man that came in last year from Oregon, and Griff Catlett, who's a big-time midfielder, can go either side and attack the goal. He's tremendous. So they really do have talent all over the field, and I think they're on a mission. You know, they lost last season, and I think they're on a mission to come back and try to bring that title back to Eagle Land.
Well, I one of the things that I really like about this team is the face-off position. I think that you need possessions to turn the tide of games and stop stretches for offensive stretches for a team. Gable really does a great job of one, gaining possessions, and two, creating offense opportunities off of the fast break. I think you're going to really see a breakout year for him at the X, which is again going to make it very, very difficult for teams to go on long runs against this McDonough team. They're going to be fun to watch.
And the number one VarsitySportsNetwork.com team of this week is the Calvert Hall College Cardinals, led by Brian Kelly. And once again, they are going to be – they're loaded as well.
They are. Without question, again, I would say they are terrific, starting with Jacob Kelly on attack. And
how many Kellys are there? Are they
– and
many.
And don't forget
more to
Daniel,
come, right?
Who's on that same attack unit, who started as a freshman and scored a boatload of goals last year. Very poised player for a freshman. Good size, great finisher. And, you know, Jacob just does everything. He can dodge to score. He can feed. He picks up ground balls. He rides like a banshee. You know, he's a coach's dream when you're watching him out there because he just gives it everything he has. He reminds me a lot of Marcus Holman, although he's a left-hander, in the passion he plays with day in and day out. And I think he's really the heart and soul of that group. The question for Calvert-Hall, because I do think they have a very strong defense as well. The question is in the middle of the field. You lose a Brendan Curry, who's now at Syracuse, Omar DeBerry, JT Bugliosi. You've lost some real guns in the middle of the field there. And I know they have guys behind them that are ready and to pick up the slack. And I know Coach Kelly will do a tremendous job coaching those up. But the X factor for this team, they're playing with emotion. They lost one of their beloved coaches, who's one of the greatest guys, greatest men I've ever met, Dave Huntley. And, you know, I think these kids are going to play their hearts out for Hunts.
Is it tougher to repeat? You've done it. You've been there. How tough is that? Is that more pressure on the kids?
No doubt it's tough to repeat in this league. You know, it is murderer's row year in and year out. You know, our 91-92 group, in 92 when we repeated and went 17-0, seven of those games were one-goal games, and we were just in a dogfight because everybody brings their best game to you, their A game, every single time. And the Hall's going to have to weather those storms.
Again, you got a strong defense that has the ability to do that. Another thing, just to piggyback off what Coach said regarding Jacob, he's an offensive coordinator's dream. Yeah, he's also a defensive coordinator's nightmare. What I like about him is he creates slides, which obviously puts the defense in a vulnerable spot. He's always getting a step on his man. He's extremely talented. One of the things that I enjoy watching about him as a player is that he just, his first step, he lulls you sometimes to sleep, takes that first step, and he's by you. And he could put that pass right on your ear if you're sliding from a man, leaving him open on the crease. If you don't go to him, he's going to come around. He has one of the most accurate shots right around the cage. So he's deadly in all areas. But again, as a defensive coordinator, to plan for him, especially again with Daniel on the crease, taking his passes. And I had the fortunate opportunity to coach Daniel with Under Armour this past summer. He's a wonderful player to have as a recipient of passes from Jacob, and I think you're going to see a lot of offense come out of those guys this year.
Okay, that's great stuff. I'm sure this poll will change week to week as the season starts and teams start playing each other. Once again, this segment was brought to you by VarsitySportsNetwork.com. So if you need to know anything about what's going on in high school sports, especially right now in high school lacrosse, that's the place to go, VarsitySportsNetwork.com. Okay, that concludes episode number one of our Varsity Sports Network LaxCast, brought to you by Cooper's Tavern Lacrosse. We also want to thank our other sponsors, O'Connor Mooney and Fitzgerald, True Design, of course, Cooper's Tavern, McKenzie Commercial Real Estate, Kelly Payroll, and of course, VarsitySportsNetwork.com. Once again, if you have any interest in high school sports, the place to go to see and hear and read about what's going on in high school sports all over the state of Maryland, go to VarsitySportsNetwork.com.